Okay, so thanks very much for the invitation for this workshop and for the opportunity to speak. I will talk about quantum IR effects in single field inflation. But let me start with a disclaimer. So this is a very theoretical subject. It's really for inflationary aficionados. And in the last years, I've been focusing on something else, something called the fatty filter Lascher structure. So you might wonder, why do I care what I do? Yes, I think you should, as quantum gravity is the big care. Because cosmology is a way to test quantum gravity in the UV due to the closeness of the Planck scale. Strass-Planck, Hessian symmetry, gravity is the weakest force, De Sitter radiation, etc., are all things that we kind of see in cosmology. But with the end of the Planck mission, we'd be guaranteed to continue to gain information from cosmology about quantum gravity. We need to understand the structure of the universe, and they're not understood right now well enough. So cosmology is going, passing from the CMB to Lascher structure survey, and it's like going from a leptonic collider to an hadronic collider. We did it a few years ago, but in cosmology we don't understand QCD yet. So I think the fatty theory Lascher structure, we use as a field concept, is what I believe is the first consistent approach to do the QCD for Lascher structures. The results seem good, but you have to sell it to the astro community, and it's not easy to sell this kind of techniques to the astro community. So I've been trying to do that.
Can you just clarify? Suppose I have a computer 10 times more powerful than the current one, the currently most powerful one. Is there any problem left in what you're talking about, large-scale structure?
Yeah, all problems are the same. Well, yes, we're completely, if what you say is true, in 2 years we'll be fine, but nobody's claiming we're going to be fine in 2 years. And I can answer in many ways. For example, nobody's going to simulate baryon galaxies. That's out of the question.
So sort of like the universe is turbulent and we have to look at the result of the turbulence to check the theory. Is that what you're saying?
Nobody can simulate the effect of galaxies on large distances. But also the dark matter, you can simulate in principle, but it's not good enough. That is, it takes so long, and many orders of magnitude too long, that right now people don't analyze the data because we don't have the theory to analyze the data. The data are taken, and we just don't analyze the data. So, in fact, right now, if you look, all cosmological information from inflation comes from the CMB. Lascher structure survey are only relevant for dark energy. I think we care more of inflation, so I think that's what. In particular, with this program, just to advertise it, you can see that the long-distance universe appears, the fatty theory for the long-distance universe appears like a fluid with a major speed of sound, about 10 to the minus 5 the speed of light. And this is the measurement in simulation of this speed of light from induced emergent speed of light of dark matter, speed of sound of dark matter, with two different lattice sizes. So this is the lattice running, and this curve is the theory. This I never show it. I think it's very nice, but it's a very particle physics thing. And in fact, it might remind some of you, it might remind you something similar, given that here there is the father of this stuff. I wanted to show it. So, but let me just start now with the topics I was working most of the time until 1.5 years ago, which is understanding loop correction in inflation. So let's focus on single field inflation, and we wish to understand how the presence of fluctuations at a given scale affects the behavior of mode at a different scale. So we'll focus on the curvature perturbation zeta, which is, you can think of it as delta t over t in the CMB, and there are several contributions that have been found in the literature. This has been found logarithmic running, out of the horizon time dependence, and infrared logarithms, where L is the scale of the universe, so the size of the universe. So I will present what I believe is a satisfactory understanding of these effects in single field inflation. And I will present my point of view. Thanks, Steve Giddings, for telling me that's fine. And I will try to take about 30 minutes. That was the target. OK, let us organize the discussion. So what we are trying to do is to understand what is the effect. Imagine that this is the inflationary epoch. There is a mode. This is space and this is time. A mode goes on with time and stretches out of the horizon and grows with wavelength. And there are other modes around. There are long wavelength modes, we will call background. And also, as the mode as becomes longer and longer than the horizon, short modes keep popping out of the horizon. The process of inflation ends when the inflator reaches the reheating surface, which is this green line here, which is much wiggle because of the curvature perturbations that occur at all scales. So we wish to understand what the other mode does to this zeta fluctuation. And there are two kinds of effects. There are what we can consider dynamical effects. Dynamical effects are effects that are in principle observable during inflation. If you are an observer in the moving in the zeta space, you should be able to see this dynamical effect. For example, if another mode changes the amplitude of the power spectrum of the mode at horizon crossing, or a bit before horizon crossing, you will see that. If the curvature perturbation becomes time dependent when it's super horizon, the observer will think that it's in a different sitter epoch. So these are all dynamical effects. And then instead there are projection effects, which are associated to changes in the scale at which a given mode K appears is seen by late time observer. If you wish, this is really an effect that appears, as far as I know, only because we're dealing with gravity, where the modes itself, the fluctuating degrees of freedom, itself define the distances we're talking about. So this creates some subtleties.
So just to emphasize, the projection effects can be physically observable effects, right? Or are you saying?
Yeah, but not by an observer during the local observer during inflation.
Okay.
Yeah.
But everything we observe is not local during inflation, right? I mean, everything we observe today is super horizon during inflation.
Fine. So, yeah.
So
fine. Prediction. Do you disagree with this definition or not?
No, I was just trying to understand
it. Yeah, we'll address this. Okay, let's focus on these dynamical effects. In fact, let's consider there are dynamical effects that can come either from short wavelengths than my mode or longer wavelengths than my mode. Let's focus on the short wavelengths of the mode that come out of the horizon after the mode we consider as crossed the horizon. So it can be proved that as our mode of interest crosses the horizon, the power spectrum, the amplitude, goes to a constant. And I will prove this maybe later. Therefore, this means that the short modes that come out of the horizon after do not have any dynamical effect after horizon crossing, apart from the standard redefinition of the background history. That is, a one loop, the short mode will carry some stressed energy tensor. This will redefine a background history. So, in fact, this variable zeta, which is defined in the following way, zeta, you can define zeta in single field inflation by setting delta phi to zero. This fixes tiny diffeomorphisms, and this fixes special diffeomorphisms so that the matrix takes the following form. Well, this is the zeta variable we're interested about, which is conserved outside the horizon if you define your scale factor as the full quantum effective scale factor, that is, after you take into account the quantum correction to the background. Now, proof of this is quite complex, and it's very easy to prove wrongly the right result, because everybody thinks that this zeta should be conserved out of the horizon, because you can see that out of the horizon looks like just a redefinition of the scale factor. So that was something that we all expected. So I will do the proof in the second part. But the fact that there is this effect from short mode is absent means that the dynamical effect from short modes to long mode restrict themselves only when the mode is inside the horizon. And then we have the usual story of renormalization, divergences, counterterms. In particular, the only difference with respect to usual story is that the logarithmic running that you get in the zeta space from UV divergences doesn't go like K over A times the normalization scale, but as soon as the mode crosses the horizon, it becomes log of the Hubble scale over the normalization scale, which is quite intuitive given that agrees with the intuition that the zeta space has a sort of IR cutoff in the theory. But this just come out humbly from the calculation. You don't put it in and you get it. So the Hubble is the natural low energy scale associated to the normalization scale where the logarithms are small.
Which H is that?
H during inflation.
Is it H at horizon crossing?
Yeah, H at horizon crossing. Thanks. H at horizon crossing. Okay, now, so this is about short modes. Then there are the other ones, which are the long modes. Now, long modes, when they cross the horizon, become constant. Of course, in space, because they're longer than the horizon, so gradients are irrelevant, but also in time. as we just I just mentioned that we can prove. Therefore, the metric for a long mode takes the following form, because the constraint variable n and ni, the DM parameters go to zero, and therefore you can just get a rescaling. You can see that the background mode appears simply as a rescaling of the coordinates. So all the effect of a background of a long mode, a background mode on the short distance physics, including our zeta, is encoded in a rescaling of the coordinate in this way. This implies that the correlation fraction in the presence of the background mode, zeta xi of background in presence of the background at a given distance delta x, is simply related to the vacuum one, the one without the background at the same distance, by the following rescaling of the coordinate.
Are you thinking of this as a quantum coordinate change or a classical one at this point?
Yes, it's semi-classical. That is, yes, this is a quantum operator, but to be intended as as expanded, and then we will take expectation values. So let me say, in the full quantum theory, you can Taylor expand this, pull out with derivatives, and then take expectation value with the standard expectation values. In the universe, the situation is not so bad, because modes when outside the horizon are very, very incredibly semi-classical. So in the end, it doesn't matter that much. In fact, you can make statements for inflationary space-time that are true realization by realization, not just on average, because of the semi-classicality.
But isn't the issue that we need to integrate over these long modes?
Yeah, next slide, yeah. You mean for the divergences?
Yeah.
Yeah, one next slide, yeah. Sorry.
So, until that question was asked, I thought I understood this equation. But you're saying zeta sub b is a quantum operator?
Yeah, is a field. Is the field, the quantum field.
So what do I mean by the exponential of that?
Yeah, I mean that I mean it humbly that I Taylor expand it and I begin to take expectation value as many.
Right.
But even more simply.
Third term and so on, all of them will have short distance singularities. So
yeah.
Are those subtracted out? Is there some prescription for defining the relative coefficients?
Yes, the short distance
exponential in some sense.
Yes, so in this talk, the only part where I will focus on the UV behavior is the former logarithm that I just mentioned. All this talk will be about the IR contributions. So to fix the UV, there will be UV contributions, and they need to be renormalized. They can be renormalized as usual. For example,
presumably want to use a cutoff scale of the Hubble scale or something.
Well, now, okay. So now I'm trying to, for simplicity, I'm trying to split.
Exponential operators are not usually simply renormalized, right? Each term requires its own renormalization or ambiguity.
Yes, yes. You will do all of them. So the 2, 3, 4, 5 functions, you have to renormalize all of them. Now, Steve was saying, here I'm talking about just long modes. To do that, I'm focused on the long part mode. If you try to evaluate this in the full quantum theory, you need to also propagate inside the horizon, where you begin to have divergences there. And they are a bit like, so the two-point explicit renormalization of the two-loop, of the two-point function has been done by me and Zadariaga. Yeah. Should work also for the 3, 4-point functions.
All that I'm trying to say is it seems to me this will introduce an infinite set of ambiguities in your formulas at higher orders.
I think the cutoff also has to respect this symmetry. I mean, the cutoff also needs to be shifted this way.
Yeah. It must be.
There's a principle that.
But it's a fair point because, well, I think that we haven't seen, unless I missed something, a careful definition of how to do all of this.
Okay, we can. I've done it. It is done, but yes. not in 30 minutes talk.
Not in general, I don't think. The whole
in general.
Treating these as quantum operators. And
so the two-point function of zeta for the UV part has been, I've done a calculation. I didn't do the whole set of calculation possible.
Just to point out a situation that we really understand where things like this are difficult. If you go between the unitary gauge and some renormalizable gauge in the standard model,
the unitary gauge Green's functions are not renormalizable. They, every order in perturbation theory, they require a new divergent counter term to be subtracted, blah, blah, blah. That's one of the reasons that people prefer to do calculations in renormalizable gauges where the usual renormalization program works. So anytime you have these non-polynomial functions in your changes of variables, you run into severe UV problems in ordinary
yes.
field theory.
Yeah, sorry, I should have stressed that. It's true. Let me just stress that what, let me explain the following. Here, I'm trying to discuss the IR effects, not the ultraviolet effects. So that's why you can put a cutoff at the horizon side and just decide. As we're going to see in next slide, as one was trying to ask, we're going to have naively this big logarithmic of the full universe dependence that I will try to put it away. So I'm focused on this. See, what I'm going to show is that these IR divergences are going to cancel. Now, this is the explanation why they're going to cancel. It's connected to the spatial variance. One can just close his eyes, do the calculation without ever exponentiating the fields, and find that the IR divergences are going to cancel. Okay. So what I'm doing here is to explain intuitively why the IR divergences are going away. You can just put a cutoff, close your eyes, and compute something that the observer will see, and they will go away. Okay, thanks.
I have a question. As time goes on, more and more modes become...
This is exactly one question, so I'll put the next slide.
So that really, Z to B is really some time-dependent thing, right?
Yeah. Okay, so... Okay, so effect... So in Fourier space, this means that the dimensional power spectrum that is just k cubed times the power spectrum, in the presence of the background mode, it's just the rescaled version of the vacuum one again. Notice that, as I said, that this is true for every realization. And also for every short mode, either inside or outside the horizon, this is true. Just as long as the mode of interest for us is of the background mode is out of the horizon. Notice that this, in principle, is a huge quantity, as some of you were trying to imply, because this integral for a scaling, this is a coincident points, two-point function, for example. And as you integrate, you pick up all the modes from the beginning of the universe. So this divergent as log of the size of the universe. And many people put this into evidence. However, I think we are interested on the amplitude of the fluctuation at the time when they cross the horizon. At the time when they cross the horizon, this fluctuation, I will prove, they freeze and they cost. So we don't need to follow them anymore for the amplitude evolution. So this means that in absence of the background mode, at the time of the horizon crossing, the two-point function is this, the standard formula for inflation. The only subtlety is that it is to be evaluated at the time, which is called horizon crossing time, where the wind number over A is equal to Hubble. When you have a background mode, the formula for the amplitude of the power spectrum is exactly the same. That is, it's still h to the 4 for h to the m plus square evaluated at the horizon crossing. The only difference with respect to absence of background mode is that what we mean by horizon crossing time is different in terms of the comoving wave number. It is this, just the when k over the rescaled wave number is equal to h. So if you can see that the amplitude depends, when expressed in terms of the horizon crossing time, only on the background FRW. If one identifies modes not with the wave number, but with the time at which they cross the horizon, then one doesn't look at this, and there is absolutely no dependence on the long mode in the amplitude of the power spectrum.
Leonardo, I don't see how it's different from the first thing that you mentioned, this huge quantity, because you're saying that locally you can do this, right?
What I'm saying,
locally, sorry? I mean, once you have a long background mode and it looks locally constant, then you can, absorb it in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically also what is done in this previous approach, right? Except that when you then look at very big volumes, where this long wavelength mode cannot be considered constant anymore, and you're looking at different parts of the universe where there is, where this mode really is changing, and you compare the two-point correlator in those big different parts of the universe, then there is a difference.
I think that may refer to the last line of your slide, right? Can you see the last
line?
I can close it.
That's an important point.
Yeah, of course, if the background mode re-enters the horizon later,
okay.
It can affect things later, but not during the sit. And in particular, this means that the whatever matters will not be relevant L, will be the Hubble size now, which is not the size of the universe. Okay.
I mean, everything is outside the horizon at the time of
yes, but last line tells is that there is a chance for modes up to the present Hubble to play a role. This L is gone.
I'm just saying that even if you went to the reheating surface and looked at very different paths of the reheating surface, it would look, it would be this.
You can get things that grow with log of the number of e-folds if you look back at them.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm not looking at those.
I didn't see your last one.
Yes. It's very hard to look at those.
No, it's fine. Sorry.
It's okay. So summary of, let me summarize the dynamical effects, because I think, dynamical effects are the following. Shorter wavelength modes have no dynamical effects once the mode has crossed the horizon, as I'll show later. Longer wavelength modes have no dynamical effects while they also cross the horizon. So basically, there is no dynamical effect. All dynamical effect happens only when the modes are inside the horizon is the usual story with a little, as in Minkowski, with a twist that instead of K over A, you get a Hubble in late time. So we're really led to consider projection effects.
Again, I guess, one thing to emphasize in the context of the last comment is this is only if you're looking at things locally. If you're somehow looking at the wave function over a range of space that spans many horizon volumes, there are physical effects in a sense.
Yeah, but physical, this is a very difficult, I should say. I'm focusing on something that is observable in the sense that it can be seen here.
Well,
in gravity, this is, I think, very subtle because it's not enough to, one might think that something physical is something that is computed on a gauge fixed metric. This is not physical. I think physical is something that you look in your eyes.
I think I'm focusing on many, many Hubble volumes. When we look back, we can see in principle, this kind
yes,
of
if one is able to make sense. I agree with you. I see.
To say it another way, would your definition of physical even include the thing we are observing right now, the scalar power spectrum?
Yeah. That's. I see it in my eyes. Yes.
But we see it now. A local observer looking back then, wouldn't you have just ruled it out as a measurable quantity?
No. What do you mean? No, the power spectrum, that a certain wavelength is seeable now. A person living at the time of reheating didn't see that wavelength. I see it only now. And in fact, this projection vector that people is going to mention about, they come from when the long mode are going to enter inside the horizon, and it's what the normal astrophysics call lensing, redshift distortion. We they have named these things, but...
There are effects that depends on inflation. There is the coupling between a long mode which is inside the horizon and a short mode inside the horizon, right?
Yes. Yes.
And this long mode is generated during inflation, right? So
yes.
In other words, if this long mode hadn't been generated during inflation, this late time effect wouldn't be seen today, right? So
okay.
It is an effect that is produced during inflation that we are seeing. I don't see how you can say, everything we see wouldn't be there if it wasn't for inflation. So I don't see how you can say all this is only late time effects, because in principle, all the structure we see in the universe is created during inflation. Right?
Okay, let me just do most of this is just semantic. Let me just say, you find, do a calculation, find this, you would say the perturbation theory and your effect depend on this, perturbation theory is broken. You have to stop and don't know what to do. So, what I'm going to say is that this fact cancels, and I can continue to do the calculation. There is no problem. So I think it makes a big difference.
There is
okay.
An IR product with
yeah, but this is a Hubble now.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. No, that I agree.
But that's totally
Hubble,
different.
The Hubble radius now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's totally different. Come on,
Okay. Well, so it's not a true infrared divergence, but it's a significant IR effect.
Yeah, no problem with those. What I'm going to define, I can define quantity air reheating, and then I can use the codes of the astrophysics people to evolve it. It's true that the mode will have an amplitude, and will do lensing, will do redshift spread distortion, will do a lot of things. They've been measured. It's not even a question. They've been measured.
Yeah, but there is also part of that effect is also this geometric effect. which you call yeah.
Actually, once a mode is inside the horizon, it's very difficult to distinguish between projection and dynamical effect because they are both. Lensing is the projection. Okay.
But the effect is still there.
So we have to talk about projection effect. The projection effect is the mapping from the horizon crossing time of a certain mode to the scale at which appears for a given observer. For example, there is Lensing, gravitational redshift. Clearly, all modes inside the horizon now, when they re-enter inside the horizon, will have both dynamical and projection effects. This is very complicated. In fact, it's a job for astrophysicists who have actually already done this and detected it. For example, CMB Lensing is a projection effect due to long wavelength mode on the short modes of the CMB. But here, we simply want to know the role of superhorizon modes. I mean, I think this is the issue, okay? There is this issue. So I think it's enough to restrict to calculate properties on the reheating surface. Because for the remaining time up to now, we can use just the astrophysicist codes. And these modes inside the horizon will matter, but not the ones outside the current horizon. So in order to define what the property of the fields on the reheating surface, I need to relate co-moving coordinates to more physical measurable measures of length. And an example is to measure distances on the reheating surface, not in terms of co-moving coordinate, but with the mass enclosed in the corresponding volume. So one can measure the fluctuations of the curvature of the universe as a function not of naive distance, but as distance taking the mass enclosed in a volume that contains that region. In particular, since reheating is an isodensity surface, and reheating, the temperature is 10 to the 9 GV everywhere on this surface, this amounts to measuring the curvature as a function of the enclosed reheating volume. Okay, so this is a physical definition of distances. In fact, for example, the number of stars with 10 to the 14 solar masses, halos, is a directly function of this quantity. So it just makes you idea. The size of the curvature fluctuation on a certain mass scale is what determines how many objects you form on that scale. So let's measure distances with this quantity instead of co-moving coordinates. So how do we do that? Well, the amplitude of power spectrum at horizon crossing time is fixed, doesn't depend on the background mode. I need to map the horizon crossing time into this volume of the reheating surface. Well, an horizon crossing volume, an Hubble volume, is seen at the time of horizon crossing in co-moving coordinates by this equation, just a cube e to the d3 zeta times the co-moving volume. This volume in co-moving coordinates at the end of inflation will cover a reheating volume, which is the integral of the square root of the metric at the time of reheating over this volume. And I can divide by this quantity 1. And I get, if I divide by 1, I can just put these vectors in, which are 1. And you can see that this reheating volume is this ratio here, which is just the exponential of the number of refoldings that you would have normally. A at reheating over A at horizon crossing, times the initial volume, times this additional factor, which is the difference of the exponential of the curvature fluctuation and reheating, which is very x-dependent. I didn't write x, but there is x-dependence, minus the curvature that you had at the time horizon crossing.
So Leonardo, again, a question. So this you can only do, of course, once you are zooming in on a region which is small enough that you can treat this long mode as a constant, right? So that you're
which is, because I'm trying to identify the mode, apart from the one effect.
So you can do it in a small region, right? So
this is a mapping from distance to... from a certain distance to when that distance crossed the horizon.
Yeah, but I'm asking.
I don't need to talk about more modes.
And the equation 1, right? You're assuming that zeta is basically like a constant, otherwise your h will depend on x.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you can only do this for regions small enough that you can treat zeta as a constant. So once again, you're looking at regions which are large compared to this distance where you can treat zeta as a constant in space. Then this approach breaks down, right? So in other words, if you again compare things on large distances with the reheating source,
okay,
you will see the effects, right?
I disagree with this, actually, because, I mean, I think discussions are welcome, so I just reply.
Yes.
So I disagree with this, because you can consider this part to be slowly x-dependent. The x-dependent is suppressed by k long over a...
I didn't talk about slowly x-dependent. I really talk about distance.
But this integral has
the wavelength of the long wavelength.
This integral has a very, very short support compared to this. So all the dependence of the long mode is suppressed by k long over a h. So it's perturbatively small. You can take it account of it, but it's not a higher divergent part any longer, because you have to hit it with a gradient. So the moment we hit it with the gradient, we're fine.
No, I don't think so, right? I mean, you have a long wavelength mode, which is sitting outside the horizon. I mean, are we talking about Dewey inflation now? I mean, we're talking about the reheating surface, right? So then...
So this integral is only on a small fraction of the wavelength of the long mode.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying, right? So you're restricting yourself to a small region, right?
So this, what I'm going to do next, that I think you already know, is applies on every point of the long mode.
Yeah, but the point is when you compare different points along the long mode, right?
I don't do that. I mean, this is a...
Choose for not doing it because you're asking it, you know, it's the what I'm aiming at is, this all depends on the question you're asking, right? So if you're asking about whether you can locally get rid of the effect of a long mode on the reheating surface, yes. But I mean, when we observe the sky, I mean, as you say, when modes into the horizon, then we are looking at things which were all super horizon at the time of reheating, right? So we are looking at things which were very separated at the time of reheating. And as you also agree that, you know, when this long mode then enters the horizon today, then we will see a part of the sky which is bigger than the wavelength of this long wavelength mode at the time of the horizon, right?
It's true, but this tells you that, I mean, I agree with that. That is, I agree that long mode inside the horizon now will contribute.
Right.
But here I'm giving a calculation which will include that terms, but it will manifestly include only terms that can matter now, which is up to Hubble now. It just to make the log L, the log L term manifestly irrelevant. But the fact...
This, I mean, if you're saying that this long mode is a mode that is inside the horizon today, then I guess we are interested in a region at the reheating surface which is larger than the size of this long mode. And then on that region at the reheating surface, which is the one we observe today, you cannot do this trick on all of that surface. You can only do it on part of that surface, right?
Okay, I think I disagree, and this formula doesn't apply, goes through. So what you say means that if in the past we had slow rotary inflation, we couldn't do the computations.
No.
Even though only modes up to Hubble matter, still I cannot do the computation. This, I don't think,
no,
and this formula tells you that.
Not at all. I mean, I'm saying that if you use ordinary full-moving variables, as every cosmologist does, then you get an effect which is, you know, you get the linear effect, which is the ordinary one we observe, and then you get a small correction, which is cut off by the longest mode we observe on the sky today. And we know that the perturbations on the longest scales we observe on the sky today is 10 to the minus 5. So we know that there is a small loop correction which is 10 to the minus 5, which is unobservable, of course, because we don't measure the power spectrum to a precision of 10 to the minus 5, at least yet.
Oh, I mean, okay. If you do the calculation for moving coordinates, you have intermediates log L. If you go to the correlation in commoving coordinates, you have determined log L's. If you do the calculation in commoving coordinates, up to your eyes, these log L's will cancel, and you're left with log Hubble now. Okay? I'm just doing the calculation in a way where log L never shows up. And so...
You're focusing on a small... Yes, sure.
Yeah, but I can do the full calculation. That's it. I mean, so instead of doing the full calculation, I show you a trick that shows immediately that you don't have to worry. That's all, I mean. As Linde didn't worry Linde knew these things in 81 immediately.
You know,
okay,
if it's 10 to the minus 5, then you cannot observe it with the resolution we have.
But this is infinite, okay, this becomes infinite. So 10 to the minus 5 times infinite is a big number. That's the problem. Okay, so I want to immediately make manifest that the term doesn't matter.
In Linde's book, he says there's this log, and inflation didn't last for too long, and so this log isn't too
big. Oh, sorry. Okay, fine.
Which is certainly the wrong thing to say, but that's what he said.
I see. Okay, so I was wrong. Okay, good. Linde is wrong. Okay? And I will not get angry. But it's okay. Right. It's okay.
Just to try to close this out. So, agreed.
Usually he's always right, so that's why.
Agreed, we at least aren't now focusing on log L effects where L is infinity, but there are log L effects where L is Hubble today.
Yeah, there will not be log L, by the way. There will be because the fat inside the horizon are not scaling variance, so actually they are still picked there.
Okay,
but Hubble now matters for things now, yes. Okay, I think I said everything here. But however, let me focus on really something that I think is much more important. That is, in this expression, modes shorter than the Wien number k contribute to the projection effect. That is, this same formula that I took before, over which, sorry, I think I never said this thing. So this volume is given by this. Then notice that in this volume, which is the size of a certain mode, measured in this way, is a change of coordinate, long mode do not contribute because long mode are constant in time, and so they cancel, and so this integral goes only over modes which are shorter with respect to our mode. Okay, so this is crucial because that's the long modes manifestly don't play any role, but short modes do. That is, this integral has support on short modes, and if I try to expand this exponential for the current universe, this is fine. These quantities are non-zero and they are not that small. That is, in particular, to leading order, since linear level, this is will average to zero. These are modes much shorter than my mode. There is an integral due to the square of these modes. And if you do this integral, you find that this integral goes like the power spectrum of the modes with 10 to minus 10 times the number of refoldings to the end of inflation, so it's 60, okay? So therefore, the radiating volume covered by standard mode becomes this formula, which is, there is the standard volume that in a classical expansion is taken by a mode, one, the Hubble volume times the classical expansion, but there is a boost due to the short modes that came out of the horizon after the mode of interest crossed the horizon, and they contribute to the expansion of the universe, so that the mode is projected on a longer scale, about 10 to minus 10 times the number of refolding. So this is a quantum enhancement of the overall expansion due to the short modes. That is, if you look at the mode on the leading surface, and you ask when it crossed the horizon normally, classically it will be this. In realtà, quantum mechanically, it closes a bit earlier, by an amount which is enhanced by the number of refoldings to the end of inflation. This is a physical effect because the amplitude of the power spectrum depends on when the mode crosses the horizon, as we just described at the beginning. So this is a principal observable effect. Notice that this term, for the more expert, is not to be confused with a time dependence on zeta, but just as a projection effect. It is the question of on which scale a mode crosses the horizon during inflation is projected in our eyes. And it's similar to other projection effects that we have already in cosmology, like, for example, we don't know what is the reheating temperature of the universe, so we don't know how long the universe expanded from reheating to now. This is a physical effect, which is a theoretical systematics of our prediction, because we don't know exactly how many foldings were to the end of inflation, so this is the uncertainty we have on the tilt. This is a similar effect. A mode, which is not uncertain, is computable, a mode crossed the horizon a bit in a different position than naive data tree level.
Leonardo, are you saying that there are such effects that contribute to the power spectrum and that they're physical?
Yeah, I'm saying that a mode, when we compute when a mode crosses the horizon, there is a small correction with respect to when we do the classical calculation.
I gained the impression that you were very, that you and Matthias were just adamant against such terms. you might recall that paper that Vakif and Emily and Emory and I.
This is a very different effect. As I said, this is not time dependent.
It's just exactly that. It's growing with the E foldings and it's down by the loop counting parameter.
Yes, but if you check.
Just saying that just cannot happen and it would be a major.
This is not to be confused, as I said. This is not to be confused with the time dependence on zeta. That is, this zeta, the mode is constant. The amplitude of the mode is constant at the riso. The scale at which it's projected is different. It's a complete. This effect comes from modes shorter than the mode under consideration. It's a completely different effect.
But one way of saying it being that it's just rewriting the usual power spectrum in different coordinates, and therefore, since the power spectrum is time independent, writing it in different coordinates can make it time independent. Like spatial coordinates. I mean, you're just rewriting in different spatial coordinates, right?
I think I'm saying something very. You can do the. Also, if you do, there is nothing wrong in doing the calculation the coordinates you want. I think I'm using coordinate that makes the fact very simple immediately to get them.
Yeah.
I don't recall anybody having identified this effect, but maybe.
Okay. I mean, all you're doing is basically just redefining the spatial coordinate and then.
Yes, but you see that if you redefine the spatial coordinate in a way that that automatically does what will cancel later in the calculation.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to answer Buddha's question, right? So
no, it's a different. Okay, I'm going to answer Buddha's question in the second part of the talk, which I will never get. So this is not a time dependence of zeta.
I'd like to hear the answer to Woodard's question. What's the
answer? I'm just trying to say that if the initial power spectrum is time independent, just rewriting it in terms of a different spatially rescaled coordinate won't make it time dependent, right? So the full power spectrum has still to be time independent. Now you can split it into different parts, which have spurious time dependence, but it has to those time dependencies has to cancel out in the end, right? I mean, because you started with something which was time independent, and
he's saying that there's no time dependence in the end?
There cannot be, right? Because they're just rewriting the initial power spectrum in terms of different spatially rescaled coordinates, right?
Do you agree with the statement that you're saying that there's no time dependence, or that there's no delta, there's no n sub e dependence on
so
that?
So this is just a projection effect. There is no time dependence. I didn't listen. So there is no time dependence, okay? This is just a projection effect, which is asking yourself where a mode is seen now.
If I made n sub e change, as I might by having a different.
Yeah, this will change, but.
So,
in other words, if zeta were to be time-dependent during the sitter epoch, an observer in the sitter space would notice that is accelerating with a different Hubble rate. This is not happening here. So that's the way to say that. In other words, this is in fact is a very very interesting fact. Maybe I'll say that next. This is an effect which is enhanced expansion, but not enhanced expansion rate. That is, just a global effect. It's a projection effect. I mean, they're observing the city space doesn't notice it. Okay, so that's okay. This, I think, is the sharp. Thanks for asking because this is the sharp way to say the difference. Okay, Hubble is the same as in the perturbed universe.
Now, could you go back to this? So this came from. So you had an e to the 3 zeta in the numerator, in the exponent, and then you brought it down and you computed the expectation value. Right?
Yes.
I mean, could it be that one measures the? I mean. Isn't this effect sensitive to how we define the long distance? I mean, how exactly we average over the short distance fluctuations? Isn't this an issue similar to what we have with fractals and so on?
Yeah, I think it's similar, but I think,
the distance between.
I think it is. I think it's exactly the same effect. But I think here you cut it off at the Hubble scale. I think until the Hubble scale, I think the effect is fine.
Right, what I mean is the volume, so you have something that is wrinkled, and you're saying just the volume is bigger because it's wrinkled.
Yes.
But maybe we could define the distance to average these wrinkles out, and we have
I think this is, you could define the distance in that way.
But isn't it
trick? As you do in your theory with large scale structure, where you find this average metric. So if you find some kind of average metric, then wouldn't this term be there?
I think because these are all.
But if all you do is to rewrite the power spectrum in a different spatially rescaled coordinate, I mean, then you Taylor expand or something like that, something equivalent on this new coordinate. Then when you resum that Taylor expansion, shouldn't you get back what you had before? I mean, isn't that? I mean, maybe that's what the same.
No, I don't think this effect cancels. I'm not doing the full calculation, so of course you can do it in a different way. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about if there is an overall.
This might be that the factor dimension of the universe is slightly bigger than 3.
Yeah.
So this should be viewed as 3 plus epsilon. Epsilon is 2 Newton or something. And it's growing faster because when you go to longer distances, you see more and more of the sprinkles.
Yes. Yeah. It's exactly the effect. But I think, I'm hesitant in averaging it out, this effect. Because, first of all, these are all super Hubble fluctuations. I think, for example, there is really more matter. So if I ask how much matter is in the region, given that these are all Hubble, there is no equilibration time, nothing. This is really Hubble region. So if I do the integral over the matter, I get 10 to the 20 kilos instead of 10 to the 18 kilos. And the object I form is bigger. I'm quite confident about this. And in fact,
it's a slightly bigger dimensional volume. I mean, it's
It's a small effect, but I thought you were wondering if actually it's all the definition could be made zero. It's a small effect in this regime, but I think it's physical effect because of what I just said. Because this model fluctuates, the node oscillates, right? For example, so it's kind of, I don't think you can integrate them out in. Okay, thanks. So now, this is, I said that there is an average overall enhanced expansion, but these are quantum operators, so why I took the average and not the variance? I think there is a nice effect that the enhanced average of the volume is proportional to the number of refoldings to the end of inflation, so it can be made arbitrarily large by making inflation last longer and larger. Notice that the variance instead is always over the one, that is not enhanced by the number of refoldings that should be here. This is because, what is the physical effect that's going on? A mode crosses the horizon and expands. While the modes expand, short modes crosses the horizon. And in each point, the infrared will go up or down, backward or forward. If it were backwards, by the time it reaches the starting point, it has produced more volume. So even though the jump backward or forward are the same on average, you get more volume because when you jump backward, you get more volume. So when the jumps happen when the mode is very, very long, basically there is no variance because there are so many fluctuations that you get every time the average effect. But when there is a mode, one Hubble time after the mode has crossed the horizon, there is only order one Hubble patches below my mode. And they have a variance which is of the order of the expectation value of the jump. And so these modes, the first jumps after the mode has crossed the horizon, lead to a variance, but it's not enhanced by the number of refolding because quickly the variance goes to zero. So the variance is this, which means that this effect, which is quantum, tells you that the space-time is quantum modified, but it's still quite deterministic. In the limit of number of refoldings to infinity, the average is radically changed, but the variance not, which means that the universe is still quite deterministic at 1 over number of refoldings. Expansion. I think I already said this. The expansion rate is the same. So the quantum variance of this effect is very small. Now, in our universe, this effect is tiny because delta and E, these are all, delta is 10 to minus 9, so we don't have any room. No? But in slow rho Laterran inflation, where delta is of order 1, where delta rho over rho of the Wubi universe is order 1, this effect is very large. And therefore, it is necessary a non-perturbative treatment. If you ask yourself when a mode crosses the horizon, which scale it ends up at the end of inflation, it is an order one correction that needs to be computed. Now, for a totally different reason, we had already done this thing. That is, in a series of papers, we had understood how to quantitatively study slow rho Laterran inflation. And the effect I just talked about is, that's why I said Linde already kind of knew that, this effect is nothing but slow roll Laterran inflation when the effect is very small. As this fluctuation becomes more and more large, the scale over which a mode is projected can become arbitrarily large and in principle infinite. That's when eternal inflation, slow roll eternal inflation happens. And in a different for different reason, we had already computed the volume produced by a certain Hubble patch during in all regimes of the amplitude of the power spectrum. And we found this formula, where all pi's, everything is... I advertise this formula because I think it's the first time slow roll eternal inflation is understood quantitatively, with pi, 2's, it's not squiggle here. And we found that as a function of this omega, which is basically 1 over the delta rho over rho of the late time universe, the volume that you get is this. And then... yes, okay, thanks. Yes, okay, yes. There's no squiggle in the exponent, thanks. We found a phase transition. There's a phase transition when this quantity is equal to 1. So if the potential is flat enough that this quantity is bigger, is less than 1, then you have a finite probability of creating an infinite volume. And you can compute this probability. And the probability of creating a finite volume, in fact, you can compute it, and the integral is less than 1. There is a finite probability of creating infinite volume. But otherwise, you find for this parameter omega bigger than 1, potential very steep, you find that this effect, the integral is always 1. And so you only produce finite volumes, but the volume is very different from the classical 1. In fact, at the onset of the phase transition omega equal 1, the rating volume is e to the 6 number of folding. So it's incredibly larger than the classical volume. It's a factor of 2 in the exponent. But surprisingly, this is, even though the average volume is exponentially larger, the variance is still peaked. There is no enhancement of the variance. So the universe is completely different than what classically would be, but is still deterministic. So I think this is, okay, now I want to be, as if we were not enough controversial, I think this is even better than the Bercole evaporation process, because this is only one. This eternal inflation is one of the two solutions that I know. Black hole is the other one, where quantum effects change the asymptotic space-time. And in the black hole evaporation, at least in the standard ones, the space-time is deterministic because it's a very slow process. Here, the space-time is even made stochastic, so it's even better. Okay. So, and now we're beginning to understand it quantitatively.
So just for emphasis, so this is a huge IR effect. This is sort of the, well, some extension of the IR effects we were talking about to the regime where they really are important.
Yes, this is an IR effect that comes from all the modes shorter than the mode we're talking about. So there is no L, but it's the duration of inflation below when I cross the horizon. Okay, so it's the complementary. Yeah, these are modes short. So I take a box, I let it go. And since there are fluctuations of the sitter, this box keeps expanding forever, or keeps expanding by a lot amount, by a large amount. And in particular, I try to advertise because maybe this is an audience which is receptive. What you find is that no matter in all these regimes, the volume that you can create when it's finite, when the universe is finite, even though the rating surface can be very, very curved, is never bigger than e to the 6 number of foldings, which you can write in terms of the sitter entropy as the e to the sitter over 2. Probably to get this large value of this bound is non-perturbative small. And somehow this is a super universal bound, holds in any number of dimensions, higher order in gravity correction, multifields. It's a bit of a mystery why this is so universal, but I think it's connected. It's for sure the fact that this is a bound is a consistency check of the holographic interpretation of the sitter space, but that's where I stop. I mean, it would be very strange to have a finite, arbitrary large volume if the sitter has a finite entropy, because if inflation ended globally, you would see so many patches, arbitrary number of patches, which seems to be uncorrelated. So I think this is a true fact of the calculation, and is for the quantum gravity people to interpret it, okay?
But there are some weird theories where you can violate this bound, right? Some ghost inflation or something?
Yeah, when they violate the energy condition, where also the sitter entropy, exactly. So, you see? It smells something, no? Okay. Okay, let me summarize the projection effect. Longer wavelength modes, which are longer than the current RASO, absolute. This way of doing the calculation manifestly show the following things. The longer than modes than the current horizon has absolute no effects. Longer than my mode, but shorter than the current horizons, have projection and dynamical effects that start at horizon re-entry. So all of these modes have no effect on the heating surface or up to horizon re-entry. So no worries from the city space. It's not that the theory of the city space is ill-defined. We can just use the astrophysics code to do the job.
You should probably say you can all have no local effect, right? Because there really is an effect imprinted on people.
Sorry, I should say that. I don't know how to think about non-local observables in gravity, so I see what you mean.
But I don't know what to say. I mean, well, we observe things again, which is super horizon during the space. Well, anyway.
I think this is the consequence.
Right?
Shorter wavelength modes enhance the scale over which a certain mode, K-mode, is mapped to the late universe. This is a physical effect. It changes the relation between scale and the amplitude of the power spectrum, and is the child version of slow Lorentzian inflation, which is now quantitatively understood. So now, this is a list of the results. The only thing I've assumed so far, and it took 1 hour, it was supposed to take 20 minutes, is the fact that it didn't prove, which is why zeta is constant in time. So far I assume that short modes, which is what Woodard was complaining, so zeta on super horizon is constant. I mentioned that it's proved, but I didn't present the proof, and I didn't know if there was enough time or not, so I just asked, it's 1 hour. I mean, I didn't imagine.
So let's see what. Well, so you're suggesting you would still.
For me it's the same. I have read it, but I'm ready. But I don't want to take the time of important people. So it's okay.
We can see what people think.
Right? Maybe
also
the. Or maybe the aficionados. The aficionados can stay.
Yeah, let's have a little bit more discussion, and we could extend for aficionados. That could be continued. I think some discussion is good. Let's first thank Leonardo. So one thing that is maybe a quibble, but I think actually it's more than a quibble, that is now quantitatively and rigorously understood. This is an example of where we have sort of an important quantum gravity problem to think about, computing the wave function of the universe and the relevant observables in the eternal regime. That's something we don't know, I don't think, how to
after.
We have some stochastic characteristics of it, which, may be rigorous, but really, what's the wave function?
Refer to this reheating volume that you see become larger if you take delta 1, and this I think is resummed by those formulas. Yeah. You're right, we don't know everything. I think it's true for eternal inflation. I think it's the first time, that paper has two citations, so that's why I keep stressing it. This is the first time a calculation of slow inflation has been done. I think, maybe some people can contribute, because for 20 years it was all squiggles and jumps. So I think there's been progress.
And there's much more to do for us. Other discussion, comments, Richard?
Okay, so I'll bring up this issue again of the paper that I wrote with Mary Kekia and Vakif and Emily. It was based on a paper that you and Matthias Del Arriaga wrote criticizing Weinberg's paper, and you were stating that it would be a tragedy, I think that was your words, if there were an effect of exactly the type that you're now saying occurs.
No. If the effects are exactly the time that Weinberg was saying that they possibly could have been there. So Weinberg didn't make a strong statement.
Why is one a tragedy and the other is not a tragedy?
Because this is a...
They're both very, very small. They're both suppressed by a loop counting parameter that, as you noted, is about 10 to the minus 10. And they can't possibly get any bigger than about a factor of 100 due to the number of e-foldings. Why? I never understood that statement at the beginning about why it was a tragedy.
So, one of the results, 1 minute is great, okay, so. But I mean, he had done a few, I mean, he was the first to try to compute these things in the inflation, so it's fantastic, okay? But he had done some mistakes in the calculation. Matthias and I pointed that out. First of all, he found that the logarithmic divergences are k over mu, which this violates gauge invariance, and this is a tragedy, okay? So, if you take this result as it is, it implies a time dependence of zeta out of the horizon. And this, for example, would mean that, for example, it would mean several things. So you can choose how to make a gauge invariance. Either you put A of t here, or you put kh over mu. And there were two choices. If you put this, the zeta becomes time dependent, very large. And because
why very large?
Because log is a big number. I mean, in principle, sorry.
Like
sorry. It was an in principle question. It was in principle problem. That is, the.
Does this grow just exactly like what you're saying?
No, because this is the fact that the mode shorter than the horizon changes the amplitude.
Now, what you're talking about is why it's happening, but
no.
You were saying that it would be a tragedy. I never understood that because it's suppressed by a loop counting parameter that's 10 to the minus 10, and it can't get very big. It's a logarithm of something, and it just, even if the something gets huge, the biggest it can get is about 100 or so.
So, if, it's true. No, for the current universe, it's not a tragedy, and that's, but if you, you're right. So if you meant from our paper that by tragedy we meant in the current universe, there's no tragedy in the current universe. In fact, we can just forget to compute this stuff at all in the current universe.
Oh, okay, so we're
now,
in agreement.
Now, in principle, this is a very problematic, these effects.
Okay, so we're in agreement. I actually agree with you that there was that, there were two cases that Weinberg said that there were n-thread logarithms, and you were dead on right in the first one. Dimensional regularization he wasn't implementing correctly, and I agreed with you. In fact, I convinced him of that, and he very generously credited you all with that. So I think that issue is resolved. The second one, I think he was right on. I know that you and I disagree on that.
Mm-hmm. You will listen to the second part of the talk.
Okay,
yeah,
so
it's about the proof of the zeta is constant.
About the paper that the calculation that Vakif and I and Emery did, we actually got an effect which looks just exactly like the kind that you're talking about. It does grow with the number of buildings. And further, it comes from modes which are inside the horizon of the one that has already crossed the horizon, because that's exactly what is producing the infrared logarithm. That is, if you look at Bev of phi squared, the growth in Bev of phi squared is not coming from the super horizon ones, it's coming from the continual
yes,
which are crossing.
So I think we disagree in the following thing, which we disagree. That is, if I do the calculation, this effect was in a different coordinate where we are using reheating volume instead of commoving volume. If I do the calculation, which is what is going to be shown here in the next part,
yeah,
if you do the calculation in commoving coordinates, we get zero for zeta dot. And your paper in the same coordinate gives non-zero. So that's the difference.
Sensitivity that Steve and Martin are talking
about. I think, in fact, in commoving coordinates, the IR sensitivity is there, will cancel when you do the things that you see in the eyes. That's why I don't use commoving.
Well, if it'll all cancel, then why do you have to do anything?
To make it manifest that it will cancel. Unless you go and produce and compute the things that you see in your eyes with lensing, it's just that I'm lazy, so we try
to. In the calculation of the naive zeta zeta correlator, what causes it to cancel?
Yeah, the frequent function and so on, so they come from lensing or the modes, super horizon mode, if you keep using commoving coordinates when you see the light in your eyes. They will cancel. People have shown that they cancel, so. Even people have done this calculation for the CMB because it's kind of relevant for the CMB. If you want to compute the frequent function, the CMB. So, because violating that is like Maldacena consistency condition. People have checked that the Maldacena consistency condition works for the current universe. Anyway, I mean.
Other discussion? We've got a fair amount of time till cookies.
Ah, then I can go more in details. I mean, you know, sorry, yeah.
Let's see. All right, I'll let's go basic.
No, actually, I wish it was. No, let's see.
Oh, yeah, so about the projection effect after the Hubble ring, so the about CM based dots. So the people, Zavaliaga has discussed about the consistency relation, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that is about the projection effect after the Poisson Young theory. And then I thought the conclusion is that so that effect should be canceled.
Yes.
Find samples that even after the Poisson re-entry, we don't see the projection effect.
I think this is for modes super Hubble. Yeah, for modes inside the Hubble.
It is CMB, right?
So I think you can define observable, CMB observable for which the projection effect will be zero. Here it is one. If you ask, for example, okay, let me do rough. If you divide the sky in two and ask what is the amplitude of the CMB first peak at the location of the first peak, here and there, you'll get the same number. But the location of the first peak on the left and the right is going to be different because there's a quadrupole, so which distorts the location. So you can define quantities that don't have... Well, since it is a projection effect, you can be clever and undo it. Okay? And that's, I think that's what happened.
But if you made the map, you would see an untrivial three-point function.
Yeah.
Comments? Let me give others a chance if there are any others.
Somebody back there raised their hand, I think.
I don't know. Speak. I just saw that I could answer Rich's question, but I don't know if maybe Leonardo already answered to satisfaction.
What was the question you were going to answer?
Your problem with, I suppose it was the problem with this conserved zeta or something like that, and your problem.
Well, I was just going to ask what part of the phrase interacting quantum field theory do people not understand? An interacting quantum field theory has the property that it interacts, and that means that if you hit one component hard enough, sooner or later the effect of it will propagate everywhere else, at least causally.
But I think the limitations point is that, of causality. The correlators are classical and super
and that means that it just cannot be that any operator is constant. It could be that its expectation value is constant in certain states or something like that, but
in the next part of the talk we prove that zeta dot is zero as an operator.
I mean,
so
if you
all correlation function are zero.
Again, what part of the phrase
zeta dot? I mean, what do you mean? This is okay, no? Zeta dot is zero as an operator. Okay, d in dt of an operator is zero. This is pretty strong. Not on correlation function, zero. I don't know, on the interacting vacuum.
So
of course.
Operator equation, go for it, prove it. I want to see it.
But do you agree that...
As we said, we'll do later. I'm happy. We'll do later. I mean, I'm happy.
Could you just say for the rest of us, I mean, what is actually the result about zeta being constant? So, because as was just brought up, it's probably a statement in certain states, right? It's not really an operator equation, but zeta k dot.
No, sorry, in every correlation function, sorry, you are right, I apologize. So every correlation function of zeta dot correlated with any operator on the vacuum is, that is, on not, on the interacting vacuum is zero. That is, of course, you see, it can be non-zero. That is, suppose you put your state so that after a million foldings, some particle comes out. You know what? I might be that it's true everywhere, actually. Yeah. I think actually it's true always.
Do you mean this to be arbitrary in some approximate sense or as some exact operator statement?
So it means that.
The exact operator statement that some operator is time independent is what we call a conservation law. And models that have a huge number of conservation laws usually, don't interact. So in that sense, I think...
You take the electric charge, the dot is zero, okay.
But you've got directly k for some large set of k's at least.
But there is an horizon. I mean, I think these concepts are a bit tricky there because... the reason why it's constant at all order and why everybody believes it's constant, the only challenge is to do a right proof of the right result. The only challenge is that, because everybody believes it's constant.
That was
okay.
done 15 years ago or something like that.
Okay, the reason why it's constant is because this variable zeta on super Hubble scales is like is a scale factor. Is the definition of the scale factor. And local physics. So this is the. What I wanted to give you is an intuition why I'm not answering in terms of infinite number of charges. I don't know. I think that with the horizon it's a bit tricky. That if, and what I'm going to say affects the horizon. The reason why this variable zeta is constant outside the horizon is because when it's outside the horizon, it's degenerate with the scale factor. And by gauge invariance, nobody cares about the scale factor. And so it's very hard to change the scale factor.
Well,
why you should.
Care about the time dependence of the scale factor.
The time dependence, so the factor, yes, yeah, so the, if you were.
You're claiming zeta doesn't have.
So if you study. I'll give a talk about this later. But so if it has a dot, it would change the Hubble constant. Homogeneously, locally, you need to change the Hubble constant. To change the Hubble rate, you need to have a change in the T mu nu. And this is it just doesn't happen. I mean,
to change the, what's the statement again? I didn't.
So this zeta dot is related to the, is the change in the T mu nu. In the T mu nu, I mean, zeta dot is of order, is more or less Hubble, okay? And so is having a different zeta dot.
Why
then
can't there be changes in T mu nu? Why couldn't some?
Because it doesn't have changing a zeta dot slowly modulated of very, very super Hubble distances means that there are long, super long wavelength fluctuations, long wavelength correlations.
Let's just give you an explicit example. Suppose we Yukawa couple the inflaton to a fermion. Right, exactly the same thing that would have destabilized.
Yes,
the
yes, sorry. Yeah, good. Status. Thanks. Okay.
With no gauge thing, so the
yes.
Coleman-Weinberg potential points down.
Yeah, because sorry, the point. I should say that this is, but this is it's kind of standard. But what this is conserved in single clock inflation. Of course, in multi-feed inflation is time dependent even at three level. So you must have 1 degree of freedom, and inflation is an attractor. So as soon as the mode come out of the horizon, you'll find yourself always in the same
situation. Maybe I wasn't clear. I want to have one inflaton, one scalar inflaton. I just want to have a matter field.
Yeah, if you have two fields, if you have two fields, zeta will evolve with time. Can, in principle, can evolve with time. It does so even at three levels.
Okay. So then the theorem that you're quoting that everybody believes that is all that is, it's not even relevant to the universe, right? Because we certainly have other fields.
I think if the fields don't have relevant, I think it holds in the true universe if you have single field inflation. The important thing, if the fields that have additional fluctuation don't matter for.
Then go back to my fermion example. We have a fermion, you couple it to the inflaton, it'll induce a Coleman-Weinberg potential, which for sure is a quantum effect.
Yes.
Which goes down, not up. Same thing would destabilize the standard model. It's for sure an observable effect. And
I think if you define the inflation around the effective potential, zeta is constant. That is, you must define zeta around the effective potential. As I mentioned in the beginning, you must define, it's very important to define zeta as the perturbation around the right ground cosmology.
Okay, so suppose that the universe is in some kind of, starts out in some kind of a false vacuum, and then the generation of the quantum effects due to the fermion fluctuations is not instantaneous. I can easily create a situation where it's going to be time dependent.
Yes, and then we'll see if it holds with the. What can I tell? I mean, I don't know. I need to see a specific example and then I'll judge it.
Okay. I don't want people to miss cookies, so let's stop here, but this could continue privately after, and I guess if anyone wants to come back and hear the rest, that could be done after cookies as well. So let's thank Leonardo.